Feeling good here. Feeling good. Little under the weather. Little on the ill side. Allergies more than anything. We're here live talking some hockey on the Hockey Talk Show. Super excited to be here with you guys. And we have a lot of stuff to cover. Lots of stuff to cover on the program tonight, of course. Round three of the playoffs begins in mere moments. We'll get into Canes and Bruins. We'll talk about Sharks and St. Louis as well. Ken Holland has landed in Edmonton. We'll analyze that situation and what that means for not only Oilers, but a lot of other teams. I expect there to be a lot of changes amongst the Edmonton Oilers. So that means trades and players moving and where are they going? Who are they going to get? We'll talk about some of that stuff coming up here on this episode of the Hockey Talk Show. And the NHL has an offsides problem in a major way. I know St. Louis fans are, Colorado fans are not going to be excited to talk about this part about it of the show, but we are going to talk about the NHL's offsides problem as well. Here live on the Hockey Talk Show, Facebook and YouTube. And don't forget, we are available on all the major podcast networks. Make sure you guys are doing your part to support the Hockey Talk Show. Listen to the podcast, even if you're watching the live show. And of course, give us those 5-star ratings on Apple Podcast. Always helps. Hit the thumbs up on this video right away. And of course, hit that share button. Put it on Twitter and Facebook and tell a hockey friend of yours that we're talking hockey right here, live, one-on-one interaction. The only place on the internet is on the Hockey Talk Show and HockeyTalkShow.com. All right. In the chat, if you're there, say hey. If you have a question, let me know. We'll get to whatever topics that we can on this episode. Like I said, there's a lot to talk about. And I guess let's start with the offsides problem that the NHL has. I wasn't really... here's the thing. This is not complaining. I wasn't rooting for Colorado. I picked San Jose to go to the Cup Finals. So I was really happy with the outcome. That being said, it's not unfair. I know if you're a Colorado Avalanche fan, you're going to be complaining and saying, this is unfair, this is BS, it was a terrible call. I'm not here to say that. I think the call was correct. The call was the proper call amongst the rules that we have right now in the National Hockey League. And if you're not aware of this, one of the goals for the Colorado Avalanche got called back in the game last night, which they eventually lost, which eventually eliminated them from the Stanley Cup Finals here, the Stanley Cup playoffs, I should say. We'll bring it up on the screen. If you're listening on the podcast, you can go back and watch on Facebook or YouTube to get the image. But one of the Colorado players was going off on a change, and the puck came out of the net. The puck came out of the zone. Colorado goes back in. The player hasn't stepped off the ice yet, but he's essentially up against the boards, and he's about to go off, and they call this offsides. Now, by the rules that we have this season, again, this is an offsides call. There is a player standing in the zone, clear as day, and the puck is out of the zone, and they come back in, and he's still standing there. That is an offsides call. It is a good call for the rules that we have today. What I'm saying is the National Hockey League is going to have to alter their rules going into next season, because this is a terrible, terrible scenario that I understand that nobody really saw coming. And this is the kind of thing that after you implement a rule, you start to see, oh, okay, this is affected this way, this is affected that way. You know, you start to understand the rules, things change, and you go, okay, we gotta revise this a little bit. The NHL needs to revise this part of it because there's an inconsistency. If a player is about to hop off the ice and they are within 5 to 10 feet of the bench and another player hops on, so technically there's more than 6 players standing on the ice. Let's say there's 7 players, but one's about to go off and he's standing right next to the bench. He's still standing on the ice, but he's about to go off and the other player hops on and he gets into the play. Nobody calls that too many men on the ice. Now, there are judgment calls when it comes to that, of course, but for the most part, it's up to the NHL, the referee's discretion to say, that guy wasn't involved in the play. He was about to hop off. It's no big deal. Next guy got on. They were close enough within the 5 feet. They have that imaginary line of 5 feet from the bench where they'll excuse some players slowly meandering to the bench to go for a change. they need to implement that part of the rule to this offsides call. Because as you can see here, this player has his back to the play. I don't even know who it is. I forgot who it was. It's insignificant. It doesn't matter. The player is standing in the zone with his back to the play, literally about to walk through the door in 2 seconds. He is in no way impacting the play, in no way, shape, or form, you know, going to turn around and he's out of the play, just like he would be on a change and you wouldn't call him for too many men. So then why are we calling this for offsides? Again, as the rules are, they are written this year, this is an offsides play. It's the proper call, what happened to Colorado last night. I'm talking about sitting back and revising the rule for next season and looking at this and going, wait a second, this guy was going off. He wasn't impacting the play whatsoever. Why are we taking back a good hockey goal in this scenario for a player that's going off on a change? Why are we doing that? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So that's something that the NHL is going to have to look at for next season. They got to change that rule right away because it's bad. It's bad for the game. You just don't want bad calls, bad, poorly written rules affecting the outcome of games. And the Colorado Avalanche's season, look, we don't know how that game would have ended if that goal, you know, we don't know. But the fact is they lost a goal in a really important game, and it's an unfortunate situation. Again, it's by the rules for this year, so it's totally kosher for me right now. I'm just saying in the offseason, the general managers need to look at this and go, all right, look, we're going to have to put something in the rule books that says the referee can make a call if there's a player within the 5 feet and he's nowhere near the affected area and he's already way out of the play and he's just a millisecond away from stepping onto the bench like he is in this situation, we can call that a good goal. I think the NHL needs to look at that. And I think it would make the game a little bit better. Then I would really like this rule. Because to me, I know this rule is crazy, but I feel like it is helpful to a degree. It does keep the game honest. I'm not fully in love with it, but it keeps them honest. This is an unfortunate side effect of that. So I'd like to see that changed ever so slightly. Welcome in, Danny. Dominic, how's it going? Dominic rooting for them Bruins. I tell you, man, as I sit here and I look at this third round, I mean, this is crazy exciting. You got Boston, Carolina, St. Louis, and San Jose. When you look at the Western side of this, neither St. Louis or San Jose has ever won a cup. Boston and Carolina obviously both have had a chance to drink out of Lord Stanley. But the Western side, neither of those guys have had a cup. We've got some interesting matchups here, too, as Dougie Hamilton returns to the Boston Bruins from whence he was drafted. So that's an interesting storyline. Should we get a St. Louis-Boston Bruins Stanley Cup final, we'll have David Backes returning to St. Louis, which will be interesting. Should we get a San Jose-Boston Stanley Cup final, we'll have Big Joe Thornton returning back to the Boston Bruins. I think that is an incredible storyline to be rooting for. If you're just in this for the good storylines and you just want to see a good storyline play out, there is no better storyline than Joe Thornton and the San Jose Sharks versus the team that drafted him 20 some odd years ago and the Boston Bruins, because they went ahead and traded Joe and they sort of went on their runs after they traded Joe, who was by all accounts supposed to be, you know, he was supposed to be the guy, right? Joe was supposed to be the guy for Boston when he was drafted. He was that prototypical player. He was that unbelievable, like, oh my goodness, look at this guy, right? And he was never able to deliver a championship to Boston through no fault of his own. But Boston found a way after they traded him. And now here he is all these years later in what could very well be his final season. And that could be one hell of a storyline. Jumbo Joe against the Boston Bruins. That would be exciting. Sharon, I'd like to see San Jose win the cup. I think a lot of people would. I think the other storyline in all of this, too, is that Jumbo Joe is the Alexander Ovechkin and the San Jose Sharks are the Washington Capitals, where we've been picking, you know, people have been picking the San Jose Sharks for years to win this damn thing, and they've never been able to, and finally, this might be the year. This may finally be the year that it happens. Let's go through some random thoughts here that I've been having. I always look at goaltending because that's an important thing for the Stanley Cup Finals, obviously. And the goaltending tales actually tells a pretty interesting story here. As we take a look at this, the save percentage for remaining goaltenders, best save percentage right now, belongs to Curtis McElhinney. He played 3 games, 947. Tuukka Rask right behind him at 938 in 13 games. Binnington has a 915 in 13 games, and Mrazek has a 913 in 9 games. Martin Jones is the worst at a 910. As far as goals against go, again, Martin Jones is the worst with 2.72. Now, if you told me that I had a goalie with 2.72 going into the playoffs, I'm like, all right, not bad. I feel like I got a good chance to win. 2.72 with Martin Jones is the worst goals against average in the playoffs right now. McElhinney has a 1.56. Mrazek has a 2.22. Rask has a 2.02. And Binnington has a 2.39. So if you want to win a game against one of these teams, you have got to score 3 goals. And the San Jose Sharks are more apt to let those 3 goals in out of all of these teams. Let's take a look at Carolina and Boston. Here's Firestrike, Jack, how's it going? Jack saying the Bruins are bad right now. St. Louis, Boston, what could be better? St. Louis taking it, says Dave on Facebook. I mean, these are great matchups, right? I mean, these are, you know, all things considered, we thought we were going to see the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, pre-postseason. We're looking at this going, who the hell is going to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning? They're obviously going to win the Cup. And now we're sitting here looking at Canes, Bruins, Blues, Sharks. And it's kind of exciting because any one of these 4 teams could win. I mean, I'm going to give my picks here and I'm going to make my predictions, but let's be honest with each other. Come on. I mean, there's no telling what can happen. Both of these series are probably going to go to 7 games, if not 6, at the very least. Nobody's sweeping anybody in this round. I would be amazed if that occurs. And I think you're going to see some really close games. You're not going to see a 6-2 game in these rounds. I just don't think. I really, really don't think. Unless somebody has a really, really rare night. Let's get to this comment from Joan. I want to address this. Blues are the Cinderella story of the season. Rock bottom on January 3rd. Now facing the Sharks in the 3rd round. Let's go, Blues. Okay, I'm going to allow the excitement for the Blues fans. Joan, Blues fans, you guys have every right to be as excited. But the interesting part about your comment is the Hurricanes could make the same exact argument. They were out of it in January, just like the Blues were, and both of those teams climbed back into it. So that's what's interesting, too. If it winds up being Blues-Canes, you have essentially the 2 Cinderella teams going for it in the Stanley Cup Finals, which would be downright amazing. I do think that I feel like Carolina is a little bit more of the Cinderella team because nobody picked them for the playoffs whatsoever. Whereas the beginning of the season, we all had St. Louis penciled in for a playoff run. They fell out and then found a way to climb back in. So that is an amazing Cinderella story. But it, when you really pull back out of it, nobody had Carolina in this at all from the beginning. And they're here. Whereas I think we all had St. Louis going into a playoff run for the finals. But Joan, be happy. Absolutely. The Blues are still here. Blues have got to be excited to play. San Jose is not going to be easy, but we'll talk about that series. Let's go to Boston and the Hurricanes and take a look at some of the things that I've noticed about the Eastern Conference Finals here. Again, the goaltending matchup is super close. Tuukka with a 2.02, McElhinney with a 1.56. Again, he only played 3 games against the struggling Islanders, who were hard-pressed to find their offensive prowess in the 2nd round. Mrazek with a 2.22. I think, we don't know, because we know that Mrazek's going to dress tonight. I think Mrazek is actually going to start. So that'll be interesting to see how he is coming back off of that injury that he incurred in Brooklyn in the 2nd round. So we'll see. It'll be important, you know, if he's not 1,000%, I wouldn't chance it here. I would go with McElhinney. He was good. McElhinney was good. I wouldn't take any chances if I'm the Carolina Hurricanes. I really like the Carolina Hurricanes defense. The more I saw this team in round two, these guys move the damn puck out of their own zone with such ease. From Justin Falk to Dougie Hamilton to Jacob Slavin. Jacob Slavin doesn't have a goal. He leads the team in points with 11. It's 11 assists. The guy knows how to move the puck out of his own zone. The Carolina Hurricanes are super, super stingy. This is something that the Bruins are going to really have a hard time trying to overcome. They are super stingy. They dominate the play a majority of the time. The Hurricanes dominate shot attempts regardless of their score in a game, showing a clear tendency to keep up the pressure even when leading. When they've been ahead in the postseason, they have controlled 55.61% of the 5-on-5 shot attempts, which is quite unusual. You look at this team, they just hang around the perimeter. They just hang around and hang around and hang around. And all of a sudden, boom, they drive to the net or they drive to the slot. That is exactly what this team does. They just love that cycle. They love that outside game. And then all of a sudden, when you're a little weary, 40, 45 seconds into a shift, boom, they just drive to the front of the net. And it's a pretty interesting strategy. I look at the Carolina Hurricanes like Homer Simpson. You remember that episode in The Simpsons when Homer is like the boxing champion and all he does is get get his face beat in for the first three rounds. And then when the guy's like punch tired, he turns around and knocks the guy out. That's what the Carolina Hurricanes are. You can just hit them and hit them and hit them and it doesn't matter to them. And all of a sudden when you least expect it, boom, they take a swing back. And they are incredibly well conditioned. And I'm not surprised. Rod Brind'Amour is a psychopath when it comes to conditioning. He was one of the first players in the league to really care about cardio and, you know, body and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not surprised that he's keeping his team in good shape, but they are incredibly, incredibly well conditioned. So Boston's going to have to figure that out. I'm leaning towards picking Boston in this series because I like the experience and they're getting really good goaltending. But I also feel like I've picked against Carolina twice now, three times, and they're going to really, really make me look bad. But my own vanity aside, I'm going to go with Boston to win this series, and I'm going to pick them in seven games. It scares me to go to seven games, especially with Justin Williams in the lineup, because there is no better playoff performer in game seven than Justin Williams. I could absolutely see him winning a game in game seven if it goes there. But there's just too much on Boston to love. And, that being said, I'm taking Carolina for game one. I don't like that Charlie McAvoy is out. He was suspended. I think that's going to hurt them. I forget the name of the young kid. I'll try and bring it up. That's coming up. That's going to sit in. Connor Clifton. I think Connor Clifton is his name, right? He's going to come in for the Bruins here. And I think he's going to play with Zdeno Chara. I don't love that. I don't love that. I mean, I don't really love anybody in a uniform that's wearing number 75. Sorry. Unless you're... What is Reeves wearing? Is Reeves wearing 75? I forget now. But he could do it. He could wear whatever he wants. You give somebody a 75. That's not a good sign. I know Connor Clifton's a talented kid. He's going to do all right. But he's no Charlie McAvoy. He's got 2 assists so far in the playoffs. He's played 8 games. So he's got a fair amount of play in there. I don't love that tonight. I don't love the overall defense of Boston without Charlie McAvoy in this series. And I think you're going to see that perimeter game from Carolina take its toll, especially on the Chara pairing, the later on this game goes. Again, give me McElhinney in net. I'll feel that better if it's Mrazek and he's hurt. If it's Mrazek, then Boston's got to jump on this right away. And they got to test him super early and get him moving. That's what I would do. If I'm the Bruins, I'm saying, let's get shots on net, but let's get some cross-ice movement so we can really see what we're dealing with Mrazek here. But overall, I don't know. I like the way Krejci's playing. I love the way Backes is playing. I said this a couple of episodes back. With Backes in the game, they sat him for a couple of games. They didn't win. But with Backes in the lineup for the Bruins, they're just a more dangerous team. They're really, really good. They're really, really good with David Backes in there. He's got 4 points in 7 games. He's having a good playoff. I like Sean Corrali's game. He's slowed a little bit, but he's still really good. I like the bottom six of Boston. You know, it's hard to pick against Patrice Bergeron. I mean, you look at Justin Williams and you're like, it's Justin Williams. It's game seven. But when you look on the other side, it's Patrice Bergeron, you know, and it's a similar type of game between those guys. Both have the offensive skill, both very responsible in their own zone, both leaders, you know, but I like Boston just a little bit better, just a little bit better. But if we're sitting here and Carolina's going to the Stanley Cup final in the end of this, I'm not going to be surprised. Again, they're one of the Cinderella teams. So, you know, what can you expect? Let's take a look at St. Louis. Now, if you look at my playoff picks in the beginning, I actually had St. Louis going pretty far. Always liked St. Louis. Always liked the hot goaltender. Binnington has been amazing. I feel like the last couple of games, he's maybe, you know, starting to see that wear and tear of the playoffs here. 13 games into it. But again, when you compare goaltenders side by side, and Martin Jones, I feel like, has really raised his game lately. Still, your overall body of work, the slight edge goes to St. Louis in goaltending. They've got the goaltending. Binnington's amazing. He stays healthy throughout the series. And St. Louis is going to give the San Jose Sharks a real, real run for their money. Dominic brings up a good point here. Let me address this quickly. Marchand's going to throw the Carolina game off. I really want to see what Brad Marchand does in this series. He had a really weird press conference in Game 7 after Columbus where he was only giving one-word answers for whatever reason. He's such a weirdo, but he's a great player. And he's a great, great agitator. And the Carolina Hurricanes have not seen an agitator like Brad Marchand in this series. They just have not. You know, they've had to deal with Tom Wilson. They've had to deal with Cal Clutterbuck. You know, they've had some agitators in their face, but nobody does it like Brad Marchand. And it will be interesting to see how he affects this series and how he can play. He's been under control. He hasn't licked anybody. You know, that little shot to the back of the head was a little bit much. No, people didn't like it. You know, whatever that was. But overall, he's been okay. He's contained himself a bit. So I like it. I like where he's at is what I'm saying. He's been far worse and far more out of control. I feel like he's in a little bit of control right now, which is a good sign for the Bruins. But back to the San Jose and St. Louis. You look at the top of the scoring here. Jaden Schwartz, 8 goals, 3 assists, 11 points in 13 games. Petrangelo is, again, like Carolina, moving the puck well out of the St. Louis zone. 2 goals, 9 assists for him. Ryan O'Reilly, 2 goals, 7 assists. Colton Parayko, 1 goal, 6 assists. David Perron's been chipping in, 3 goals, 3 assists. 5 goals for Vladdy Tarasenko, not too bad. I'd like to see a little bit more out of him as this playoff series goes on, because now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of it all. And when you put that next together, San Jose Sharks, and we look at their top scoring, you know, Logan Couture, 9 goals, 5 assists. Tomas Hertl, 9 goals, 5 assists. Brent Burns, 5 goals, 9 assists. Carlson's got 12 assists. Timo Meier's got 10 points, 3 goals. All with 3 goals and 3 assists. Kevin LeBlanc, Mark Edward Vlasic, and Joe Pavelski, who came back and scored a pivotal goal in Game 7 against the Colorado Avalanche, had a nice tip after getting his brain guts knocked out in the Vegas series. For him to come back so quickly is a good sign. I like the way Martin Jones is playing. I love St. Louis to go to the finals, but I think it's going to be the San Jose Sharks. I think we're going to see Sharks-Bruins. I hate to go with the obviously more experienced, predictable teams here, but again, for all the reasons I laid out, it's just little slight edges. Just little slight edges. I think Martin Jones' game has been good, not as good as Binnington, but he continues to improve, and I like that. But more than anything, you know, scoring becomes the premium here, especially in these later rounds. Couture, Hertl, Burns, Carlson, Nyquist evens, got 7 assists, Kane 2-5, not too. The Sharks are just, they're built. They're really, really just built all around. They're going to come at you super strong with 3 lines and a nice 4th line. And I like that Joe Pavelski's back in it. You know, Couture, Hertl has been amazing in front of the net. So that's something that Binnington is really going to have to deal with. I think over the long term, I take the San Jose Sharks here. because, you know, again, scoring, they're not as good goaltending-wise, but I think scoring-wise, they are slightly better than the St. Louis Blues. So there's my playoff prediction. Give me the San Jose Sharks. Give me the Boston Bruins. And that's going to be our Stanley Cup final, of course. We'll converge again to predict the Stanley Cup finals before we get to that. And finally, to wrap things up for this evening, let's get to this. We didn't have a chance to talk about this the other day. I wanted to do a show, but I was a little under weather, as you can hear. I'm still kind of getting over this cold here. And nothing was really all that interesting said in this press conference. I mean, we heard, you know, essentially all the things you're going to hear when you're introducing a general manager. But Kenny Holland goes to the Edmonton Oilers. We're not surprised when the Steve Yzerman move was made. I told you Kenny Holland's going to go to either Edmonton or Seattle. I was a little surprised, and I didn't really hear much about Seattle in this scenario. I would have thought we would have heard Seattle make a bigger pitch or rumor-wise try and come in here and make a play, but we didn't really hear much. It doesn't mean that they didn't, you know, but I thought all things equal, I thought Kenny Holland would have stayed around this season with the Detroit Red Wings and then next year made the move. I do found that people, you know, did, I don't want to say scramble a bit, but make some early moves, because Kelly McCrimmon for Vegas was rumored to take this spot, and the Vegas Golden Knights went ahead and made him the general manager, and George McPhee moved up the ladder a little bit, which I'm still a little surprised with. I get it, it's a good move, but I'm still a little surprised that George McPhee did that at the end of the day. Sort of made the same move that Kenny Holland made to bring in, you know, Steve Yzerman. But I would have thought that Seattle would have stepped up and grabbed Holland. So they didn't. So it was Edmonton. And what I found interesting was not really so much that was said at the press conference, but the amount of critique and criticism for Kenny Holland here. I mean, to criticize Ken Holland would literally be like criticizing Wayne Gretzky. It just doesn't look right. It just doesn't look right. You can criticize Sidney Crosby for being a bit of a crybaby. You can't criticize Sidney Crosby for being a bad hockey player. Like, it just doesn't work that way. Look, there's a lot of gray area, and I noticed in the world of 2019 now we have facts and alternative facts. There's no gray area here. There's no alternative facts here. Ken Holland is one of the best general managers in the game, period, end of sentence. To sit here and critique this guy and go, oh, well, Detroit's kind of stunk in the last couple of years. Are you kidding me? The guy's got 3 Stanley Cup rings and 25 years of consecutive playoff experience. 25 years. You show me anybody that has had successful runs in their careers for 25 years straight. Give me a break. I really, really get annoyed sometimes at the Twitter heads out there that are like, oh, this, oh, that. Just shut up. 25 years this guy put his team into the postseason, made a profit for his owners, won awards, president's trophies, 3 Stanley Cup championships. I mean, that is an outstanding record. Look, there is nobody out there, Kelly McCrimmon included, there is nobody out there that is more qualified for this job than Kenny Holland. Now, did he maybe dip his toe into the free agent water a little bit too much and give some pretty big fat contracts out for maybe a little bit longer than he should have, a little bit too much in the latter years of his, you know, managership? Okay, I'm not going to argue with you there, but you have to understand something. They had a formula, they had a roster, and they were trying to constantly build around that and just make the playoffs. Their goals after a little while were, let's keep this playoff streak alive. And maybe he set that goal, and maybe ownership set that goal. I have a feeling it was ownership that set that goal, because if I'm a manager, I would have probably torn this thing down a year or 2-3 years earlier than they actually did. But you got to understand, there's a lot of money in playoff games for these franchises. Owners are going to go, just get me into the playoffs. I don't even care if we get two. If a team gets swept in the playoffs and they only get two home games, it is still a profitable year for a franchise. Hands down. Hands down. Welcome, Bruins, Phil. I hope you didn't miss the part where I picked your Bruins to beat the Canes. But, you know, you can't fault him for that. Did he make some rough moves? Okay. There were some questionable contracts. Absolutely. There were some things that I wouldn't have done. Absolutely. But the guy's a genius. The guy's a flat-out genius. And he's exactly what the Edmonton Oilers need. They need a new voice to come in and a fresh perspective. We thought we were getting that with Peter Chiarelli. I think Peter Chiarelli is a good manager. He won a cup with Boston. He was part of the architect that built the Boston Bruins that won their cup. But you can't argue with the pedigree of Kenny Holland. You just can't. You just can't. Did he have a rough 11 years? Yeah, that followed 25 years of non-stop postseason playoffs. All right, I'm going to end the show soon just for Anna. Just non-stop playoffs. So I can't stand the criticisms of this move. I mean, it's a great move. It's what Edmonton needs. Bob Nichols and him are super close. He's going to be amazing for this franchise. I can't wait to see what he does. He's got to figure out how to get rid of Milan Lucic and how to erase that contract and how to build around 97, but he will. He will, and Edmonton's going to be fine. They just got to give it a little bit of time. All right, 10 minutes till puck drop. Let's see what happens here. I do like Carolina tonight, despite who's in net for them to take game one, even though they will eventually lose the series. I think McAvoy being out definitely hurts the Boston Bruins in a big way. And then game one of St. Louis and San Jose, that is going to be, by the way, how about this nonstop boom, boom, boom action each and every single night? It's also worth noting that through round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs here, we still have a ratings boost for the National Hockey League. 69 games of the 2019 playoffs, and they are delivering an average total audience of over a million viewers across the NBC platforms. These are huge numbers, huge, huge numbers for the National Hockey League. It's the most watched playoffs on record through two rounds. That's big news for them. Great news for NBC. Everybody, if you're a hockey fan, should be super excited about those numbers that continue to elevate throughout these playoffs. I think it's helpful that you have non-traditional markets like Carolina that are making these runs and are making some noise and the bunch of jerks thing and that whole nine yards. I think that works really, really well for the league. And I'm excited to see what round three looks like. I mean, you got some, you know, nice size markets going into this with Boston obviously leading the way. All right, that's it. We'll leave it there. Thanks so much for the comments all around. Remember to hit that like button on Facebook or YouTube. Hi, Anna. Remember to hit that share button as well. Rate and review on the podcast side of things. And of course, we'll put the podcast up as soon as the show is done. If you have a chance, give it a listen. That is where all of our major income comes from right now on the Hockey Talk Show. Thanks so much, everybody.